Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Zach, we had about, I'd say, four major talking points on the show. We had Jon Moxley beating Jay Lethal, Roosh beating Mark Briscoe, and Swerve Strickland beating Jay White in three Continental Classic matches. We had Christian almost convincing Adam Copeland, but nobody else in the world, that he was a changed man after a car ride with the windows open. And we had Sting and Ric Flair and Tony Schiavone on a segment together in 2023, talking about Sting's retirement match. And then also the MJF Samoa Joe exchange with the mystery men in black masks, not to be confused with the devil. I think those are the major talking points, unless I'm forgetting something else. I mean, we had Julia Hart retaining her title and Mariah May visiting Tony Khan's office and the return of Darius Martin with her play of that. I think the thing people will most be talking about is the guy who's supposed to mute F-bombs on TBS and coming in about 3-4 seconds late. Wow.
I hope Tony Khan wasn't supposed to sign the TV deal tonight or something like that.
Oh God,
that would have been. It's not a good thing to walk into an office and ask for $1 billion after that goes down.
Yeah, you don't want Mariah May opening the door a little too wide into a scene that's going to cause issues like happened in the NWA. They could blow their TV deal in many ways. Hopefully. I mean, you'd think that's a TBS issue, not a AEW issue.
Yeah.
But I actually
don't
know the logistics of that. But that was you got to know that's coming, and you got to get that right. Jeez.
Yeah, so, that's what. Yes, you do.
And I mean, it's not the end of the world, and it was pretty late. But you know, it was late in the show at least. So right. You know, the real young kid should have been in bed. But you know, for the kids who weren't in bed, you know, they got to giggle a little, I guess. I doubt it harmed anyone too badly.
Yes. They have a new word to say tomorrow. So
yes. So, but what I actually want to start the discussion on is just the Continental Classic. The developments tonight, three outcomes. I guess there's a little bit of doubt with Mark Briscoe Rush. There wasn't much with Moxley and Lethal, or there certainly shouldn't have been. Jay Lethal shouldn't be beating Moxley. But then in the main event, you had Swerve Strickland getting one of the bigger wins of his career. Against not the biggest, but one of the bigger ones against Jay White. And unfortunately with, you know, a leverage pin, not like a distinct finisher, but still a big win to give him 3 points in this tournament. Well, what stood out to you in terms of specifically tonight and how they told the story, the not just who won, but how they won? Did it tell you anything more about how this tournament is going and if it's succeeding in what it's trying to accomplish?
Well, I think, I mean, the match that I was looking forward to most from both just an in-ring perspective and, you know, in terms of how Tony Khan is going to book a finish like that with two, you know, clearly two key guys on his roster that he's paid attention to the last 2 months, in particular, one of them being in a major, you know, profile match at the last pay-per-view in Swerve Strickland, and the other one being in the main event for the AEW World Championship on the same show. And now you have to decide, like, okay, which way are we going here? So I was interested to see how Tony Khan would do that and if he would kind of maintain the integrity of the tournament with whatever booking decision he made. And I think he did that. Like, I think that the match was fine. I don't know that it really clicked into third or fourth gear, but it wasn't bad by any means. It had some good near falls. And then you got, a relatively clean finish for Swerve Strickland. And that to me is the key. I think that's the talking point is, you know, Swerve continues, you know, his upward trajectory, you know, coming out of that the death match at Full Gear, and he's got this win over Jay White now. Like, I think, you know, you're starting to see Swerve kind of take his position at the top of the AEW roster, for better or worse. I mean, I think that he is somebody that Tony Khan should be building around. I think that when you look at the roster of folks that are in this tournament, you know, he's a guy that stands out as somebody who could really benefit from winning this. And when you put that all together with the wins that he's gotten so far in the tournament, I think, you know, you can reasonably say that's one of the directions that Tony Khan is likely considering here. So I think it was a really strong showing for Swerve, and speaks to where Tony Khan sees him at right now on the roster.
What would you say is the strength and also the weakness of how Swerve has been positioned by AEW if this is ultimately a big moment for him, either winning the tournament or having a major storyline by making it to the finals and coming up short, and then that leads to an angle, whatever story they're telling with him, and obviously just elevating him, you know, to win over Hangman and win over Jay White, regardless of the context, those are big moments too. Is he well positioned, or has there been some defining down of him along the way in AEW that actually creates a little bit of a headwind to him being embraced and accepted as AEW talent who either wasn't a co-founder or a former WWE or WCW for that matter, in the case of Sting and Flair, top star?
So I think he's positioned very well. I mean, as I said, I think he's clearly in the plans in some form or fashion. Like, he's in the conversation, you know, he's in on the forefront of Tony Khan's mind in terms of, like, what are we going to be doing on the show today and the next week and the week after that. I think he's clearly in a good position as far as getting TV time and, you know, just being a guy who's regularly featured. That said, I don't think he's very well defined right now on the show. He's doing what he can with the push that he's getting and the wins that he's getting. And I think because he's Swerve, he comes across as a really cool character. And people that have been following his career know his journey. And he has this like groundswell of organic support because he's been a lot of places and he's accumulated a lot of fans and credibility along the way. But when you take that all away, and when you strip it down and you just look at the Swerve Strickland character, I think that is what, you know, could potentially hold him back long-term from really being like the top guy in the company. Because, I mean, look, you have, you know, him come out of this really like blood feud with Adam Page. He's, you know, invading Page's house. He's threatening his infant baby. I mean, like, they have this just crazy, you know, violent match. And that presentation is still contradicted every week with like the Who's House chant with the audience. You've got Prince Nana out there doing the dance that's over, and that eight and arrow over is a wrong word, but that's popular to do in the live setting. And you don't have Swerve actively trying to get a certain reaction. He's not out there like really trying to manipulate an audience one way or the other. He's just out there being a cool character. And I think, you know, we've seen a lot in AEW that only takes you so far, and it doesn't have like the lasting power to keep these stars hot for a long period of time when they go that route. So for as well positioned as he is, I'd like to see them decide like, hey, all right, look, he's going to be a babyface now, and we're going to capitalize on this momentum. He's not going to change like his demeanor. We don't want that to change. We want him to still be the cool Swerve with a violent edge. Like, we want all that to be there, but we're going to position him now strictly against heels. We want him to be cheered. Let's go. Or, you know, the opposite, like, hey, no, Swerve really found his footing here as this heel character. Let's get heat, which means, you know, to me, that means stop with the dance. That means stop with the call to action with the audience. And it means let's try to get heat so, you know, I can work good programs with baby faces. I think he's got to pick a lane, and they need to pick a lane with him. And if they do that, I really think that they have something there with him because he's supremely talented. He has a special charisma about him, but you know, he needs some definition in order to fully realize, you know, what that charisma can mean.
Well, when I threw that question to you, it was a little loaded because I did have a lot of things you just said in mind, but you said it really well. The issue with him is, who is he and what reaction is he going for? And
right,
there's so many conflicting signals. And I mean, I won't repeat them. You said them. Well, I'll repeat them a little bit. I mean, like Prince Nana doing a silly dance, asking whose house is it to get a crowd response while doing home invasion angles, being one of the coolest people on the show, but also trying to get booed. It's just, it permeates AEW in other ways too, where
yeah,
they think, and people who, you know, if you see on social media, people who aren't, there's reaction on social media that's sort of like, they tilt their head at you like you're saying something crazy when you say getting a response from the crowd is not everything. You know, like if you're critical of something or trending on social media isn't everything or becoming a GIF isn't everything, but it's really not. You want to fit into the larger story that's being told, and as opposed to just thinking you've had a good week if people are retweeting you or popping for you or doing some sort of chant. You want that main goal of a character. And the main goal for Swerve should be getting booed. And there are things that work against that. You also just want the company to really get behind a handful of people in a way where you're like, these are the stars. And I'm hoping if they are deciding that they want Swerve to be one of those people, that they up their game when it comes to that. You know, they have this ensemble of wrestlers, but it's not really clear who the true top people are because there's so many championships and everybody's kind of on their island doing their own thing. There isn't a sense of hierarchy. There's a sense of there's a little island over there for these people. There's a little island over here for those people. And there's not oftentimes a lot of mixing and overlapping. And so it's hard to tell who are the stars as opposed to you're just sort of entertained at a certain level during the show. And Swerve fits into that. So, yeah, the way for Swerve to get to the next level is probably to curate, to clear away some of the other stuff he does. And if this is what it seems like it might be, some qualifiers there, because we'll let it play out, they really have to go all in with it. And, you know, if he ends up Triple Crown champion, I mean, he's just one of, you know, it's one of four singles titles in AEW that they push on any given week, not counting the ROH ones. So you're up to like six then. Well, the ROH world title will be merged, but you got the pure title. So like what, five major men singles titles that float around on the shows. So it's going to be hard to stand out with a Triple Crown title as that being some sort of defining moment for him, unfortunately, because the more belts he has, the more watered down it gets. But he is a good, to me, he's like a good test case to talk about in terms of, what does AEW have, and then how do they get the most out of it at a top level? Because he is showing he's at that threshold in terms of look, promos, and in-ring work. He's in that range of, all right, let's build on this as a top guy. I don't think he's their best wrestler. He's definitely not their best promo. I think he's been hit or miss on promos. More hit than miss, but not as consistent hitting as you would want for a top guy. But he's got a good look, but the character refinement is not there. He's a little all over the place. So there's work to be done, but having somebody who isn't from the past or doesn't feel as much, I mean, I know he's, you know, worked for WWE and NXT, but he doesn't feel as much like Bryan Danielson does or CM Punk did for that matter. Or Chris Jericho and on, or Moxley. There's something different about him. He feels a little bit more like an AEW original. So, yeah, I mean, a win over Jay White under any circumstances is good. I understand not wanting to have Jay White lose clean to a finisher, but, I mean, if this tournament is going to be built around the obvious people winning, a strategic time limit draw here or there to avoid a job, someone big doing a job, and then having roll-up and leverage finishes for matches where it's two people who are kind of on the same level, like White and Swerve are relatively close, it's not as satisfying. You know, you just kind of want to see some great booking. And I don't mean Kidman beating Hulk Hogan. We're like, that doesn't really count. You know, I mean, people see that as a fluke. It's you know, James Ellsworth winning. It's just like, okay, it's a novelty. Not that. An actual decisive, clean win from somebody a notch below somebody else, and you and people are like, whoa, that means something. And I don't know that White's been built up strong enough where you want to do that at this stage. He just lost to a one-legged wrestler at the last pay-per-view. And, you know, it's kind of thrown in as a backup to a plan that went awry with Adam Cole's injury. So it's not the best timing for tonight to be the, or this match to be the moment that happened. But I think this tournament needs it. It already has a mixed lineup. I mean, when the best thing you can say, what did Kingston say? He didn't put any scrubs. Tony Khan didn't put any scrubs in the tournament. Was that
the
phrase?
Yes, correct. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's not the highest praise. You know, like, what you want is you want wrestlers going, Tony Khan put the elite of the most elite collection of 12 wrestlers together. Is it 12? Yeah, 12, right?
Yeah, 12. Yep. Yeah.
12 matches. Okay. Five matches each. Yeah, but 12 total. You want wrestlers being able to say, this is one of the best, you know, best round robin tournaments ever. Not there's no scrubs. That's a low bar to cross. And he did cross that. Jay White and Danny Garcia, for instance, are not scrubs, but nobody is putting a dollar down on them winning the tournament, even with 500-1 odds. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah. I think the tournament has, I mean, it has a lot of issues. I mean, it really does. I mean, I think, and part of it is what you spoke about. I mean, the formula is going to be like, okay, no interference and, you know, clean quote unquote finishes. But those definitive ones are just, you know, when Jon Moxley's wrestling, you know, Jay Lethal, and not when, you know, Jon Moxley wrestles Swerve Strickland. You know, I think that people by the end of it are just going to be kind of rolling their eyes because they know how it's going to go. And I think that's an issue. The other issue that is really, to me, this really kind of stood out. I don't know if it stood out the same way to you. I'm curious to hear your thoughts. But when Jay White and Swerve were wrestling, and I'm like, man, this is like part of this tournament, and these are two, you know, on the come up guys in the company. Like this is fun. Like this is, you know, something that can take them to the next level. But then you see those three belts sitting out there, and it's like, what, you know, all of this is just for another random thing instead of the most important thing, which is the AEW World Championship. I think, like, it's fun to, you know, it can be fun to talk about Triple Crown Champion and all that jazz, but, you know, I just don't think in the AEW ecosystem something like that means all that much right now. Like, and so if Swerve has this big run through the tournament and he wins the first ever Continental Classic, it's almost like, yay, you get to be weighed down by this Triple Crown Championship that nobody cares about. Instead of, you know, even like, I think, you know, the TNT Championship would have been better than just kind of this made up thing. But, you know, if you want to have this type of tournament with some of your top guys, and even if you want to include some of your up and comers, like, I think you have to have a prize that's worthy of that spot. And if Swerve Strickland wins this, and I think that's potentially a good possibility, like, you know, I don't think that he's even in that much of a better spot than he is now, because he then has to just, you know, do whatever they're going to do with that Triple Crown Championship instead of take his place at the top of the company, you know, next to the world title. I think it's an issue. It's an issue in terms of, you know, who you want to win. Like, is Jon Moxley going to carry around this Triple Crown Championship? Like, I don't know, probably not. Is Danielson? Like, probably not. So it kind of takes them out of the, like, people who could actually win this thing. And then you take away the bottom part of the field with Jay Lethal and Mark Briscoe, and you're left with only a handful of guys that could win. And so I think it's those three belts. I mean, you know, they walk by it, it reminds you of, oh man, this is, you know, potentially a cool concept, but you're saddling the winner with an enviable task and challenge.
Yeah, but when you mention the three title belts and all that's supposed to mean so much, I imagine Tony Khan sitting in front of an amplifier in Spinal Tap going, but it turns to 11. It's like, but it's for three belts. It's for three belts. You're like, like, no, that's not enough. It's actually like the opposite of
right. It's a
cool.
detriment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. 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 And it is, I mean, you know, Tony feels differently. But I mean, I don't know how, I mean, it's just this, the tournament should have been for a trophy. You win it. And then you hopefully are around a year later to enter the tournament, see if you can retain the trophy, kind of like, oh, I don't know, the Dynamite Diamond Ring and the yeah. Owen Hart Classic. I mean, there's just too many things like that, but this had a chance. And I don't want to lament it. I mean, it's good. Like, this isn't like, oh, it's crap, it's no fun, they shouldn't have done it. But it isn't what it could have been. Now,
yeah.
There's all kinds of things. You know, if it's true, Miro won't do a job, which is just ridiculously unprofessional and pathetic, then you can't have him in the tournament. And Darby's climbing Mount Everest. If you time this tournament out better, he should be, you know, he could have been someone in it. You know, whatever. I mean, we can list the people who aren't in it. Kenny Omega, if he was, you know, healthy and ready to go. I'd like Nick Jackson to. I wrote about all this. I'd like Nick Jackson to be in it for the novelty of seeing him work singles matches, because when he's healthy and motivated, he's just fantastic. And I think that'd be a hell of a story. There could have been more stories, more depth, more intrigue. But we got some top-tier people, some mid-level people, and a couple people who have no chance to, you know, almost no chance to win, unless the whole tournament is built around telling a Cinderella story with them, which would be a weird way to do the tournament the first time. But, you know, maybe you could pull it off.
Yeah.
Whatever stories they have in mind, it's going to be a good tournament, but it isn't what it could have been. And combining three belts, that one that didn't exist, one that has a really good lineage, but people I don't think want to see merged, and then another one that most people don't know exists, didn't know exists, or knew very little about. It just, yeah, it's unfortunate. It could have been more.
Yeah, it could have been more. And also, it's just, it's, I think, you know, when you look at the brass tacks of it, like, it, that's how, you know, you make it drive viewership. I mean, yeah. You know, if you set up and you know that the field is going to include all that talent, like, that I think would attract people's attention. But now here we're you know, a week and a half into this thing, and you're already seeing kind of the booking formula play out. And so, you know, I don't know what kind of match, you know, what kind of interest and intrigue will be behind Jon Moxley and Swerve Strickland when, you know, those two go head to head in their block. Because is it going to be a roll up or, hey, we haven't had a count out. We haven't had a time limit draw yet. Is it, yeah. You know, that's what we're going to, you know? So it's like, I just think that, they can draw business a little bit better if they set this thing up in a more efficient way.
Given the way it's set up, when Jay and Swerve started wrestling, I was just like, how cool, like, it, there wasn't there. The problem with the tournament is you have matches happening without context, without backstory, without a personal rivalry. So you have to really, the announcers have to do heavy lifting to kind of explain, okay, Jay White's had history in these tournaments. Swerve Strickland is his background. Here's what's at stake for both of them. Here's the points and all that. And I mean, they're doing a good job. And I thought they did a good job in the opener, especially just talking, you know, really getting people to understand how, you know, what's at stake with each match, the point system and all that. But I want Jay White lacing up his boots backstage 40 minutes into the show or 20 minutes into the show. And Renee goes up to him or RJ or whoever and just goes, hey, what's on your mind? You've been in these types of tournaments before. What do you think? Like, questions that real journalists would ask if this were real and they really were into the tournament. And, you know, just the stuff that the announcers talk about in the background, have someone bring that up to Jay White and go, you know, how do you feel about, you know, here's the order of your matches, or here's the matches you've had, you're going to have. Go up to everybody like that and say, have you studied the other people? I mean, just have some talking points, and the setting can be cool. It can be, well, I love when Japan does that, you know, the lacing of the boots moment. You see it in hockey, you know, you don't bug people, they're lacing their skates, but they'll film them, you know, before the game starts. You get to see the players lacing their boots and putting on their pads and stuff. Like, take us to that place where the wrestler is in that mindset and find out what Jay thinks of Swerve. We have no idea what Jay thinks of Swerve. He should have thoughts on him. And if he does, if the real person doesn't, then he should get together with some people behind the scenes and go, we're going to come up with how you feel about Swerve. Let's talk about it. You're a heel. He's a heel. We want to get people invested in this match and create some layers to it and not just be, hey, it's a novel match we haven't seen before. Let's throw it in with a tournament and a triple crown at stake, which is kind of what they're doing. So I feel like, again, to get more out of this, spend more time hearing from them. And the sound bites on Collision at the beginning of the show are good. They're not great. I would like more depth to what we get, but that's just like good enough to prevent, you know, a commentary about it from me. Yeah.
Even tonight, I think, you know, the Eddie Kingston promo that he cut. I mean, that is not exactly what you're talking about, but it did, like, you know, it did lay the groundwork on what Eddie's mindset is. He was confident going in. He's had that first loss, and now his confidence is shaken. And then, you know, he also, you know, put over Bryan Danielson. Not that Danielson needs it, but, like, he goes, oh, man, I lost that first match, and now I've got Bryan coming up. And now, you know, it's like that was – I thought that was an effective way to kind of, like, give that match a little bit of a jolt. I could have done without Danielson's, like, yelling in his promo, but his response to it was, you know, at least it was there. But yeah, like, that, you know, that creates intrigue. And listen, like, I think, like, if there was – if just the notion of Swerve against Jay White, you know, put butts in seats, and you had a full building out there, like, all right, okay, right. I guess that's what you're doing. But it, I mean, there are some photos. I don't know if you've been able to be on social media. I know you're doing the report, but, you know, there, I mean, that place was pretty barren, like, in certain, it's, so it's like, it's not driving that type of interest and intrigue. So do something that does, or at least attempts to.
Yeah. WrestleTix had ticket distribution just under 4,400 as of yesterday, about 24 hours before the show started. And Ric Flair did a bunch of publicity locally because he, you know, is from here and did radio shows on local media. So, and I haven't heard what the walk-up is. The last time Dynamite was in Minneapolis was in August of 2022. So it's been well over a year. This isn't a market that they burned out. And they drew about 5,500 back then. So they're not going to be way down from where they were. You know, with the decent walk-up, they might approach 5,000, but still down. And it is a building that holds 19,000 people for basketball, for wrestling, with the staging. That's not going to happen. But you could get, you know, 10, 11, 12,000 if you had demand for it, you could. And they're just way under that. So, I mean, we got a camera angle early in the show. You could see what they're showing and not showing. The lower bowl is almost half full. The part that isn't the staging, you know, it's about half full based on what's available, not counting the entrance stage. And the upper deck's completely tarped off. The floor is pretty full. They had a nice shot of that. It's not the worst crowd we've seen, but, man, when you compare it to what we're seeing with WWE these days, with just the wide angle shots from the upper deck, the full bowl. I mean, they're showing the hard camera side in WWE now because they found a way to pack those seats. So that's part of the impression of having a hot product. All right. Good point too. Cause, like, criticism is, comes from not, it comes from evaluating something that isn't succeeding at the level it was a year or two ago. Cause, like you said, I mean, you kind of go, hey, we're learning something new. What they're doing is working. Let's figure out why. But when things are going the other direction and there's some things that jump out, that's where kind of the critiques and analysis comes from.
Yeah. Yep.
We're way deeper in the show than usual, Zach, but imagine that with us. Let's pause and introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, November 29th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the weekly newsletter, the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including tomorrow's flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our blue logo show, the regular podcast. This is our red logo show, our live post shows that then we make available for download afterwards, after Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision every week. Thank you for subscribing. If you're streaming the show, be sure to subscribe. Search Wade Keller and subscribe to both the red logo show and the blue logo show. And while you're at it, search PW Torch and subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast, a different show every day of the week with different hosts, with different themes. And that includes the Survivor Series post show from Saturday night, which is free. Kelly Wells hosted with Brandon LeClaire. Listen, start to finish, really good show. Fun to hear their initial reaction to all the CM Punk return and had live callers. So that is still available for free. And when you search PW Torch, you'll also see kind of a charcoal-colored PW Torch VIP logo pop up. That is our PW Torch VIP free sample feed. So you can get a sample of our VIP exclusive shows on there. We put 1, 2, 3, 4 up per month on that feed. But within that podcast, on the native podcast app on iPhone, you can actually just with a single click with your fingerprint, just upgrade. They'll prompt you for it. And you can unlock all the VIP shows. It's just that simple. You'll be charged through your Apple account. So you don't have to fumble around at all. It's the path of least resistance to gain full access on your iPhone, including Apple CarPlay, to our VIP lineup, which includes these shows that are offered free, but with the commercial breaks and ad breaks edited out. So you get a more streamlined listening experience. So check that out. To go full VIP, or get all the information on options, including Patreon, credit card, debit card, and PayPal, go to pwtorch.com/govip. And if you're not on iPhone, not using the native app, or you just want access to our library and our ad-free website, we have options for you, and that's where you'll find that information. We invite you to go VIP. The other voice you hear is Zach Haydorn, who has been a frequent guest co-host and guest host on this very show over the years, and my guest on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast flagship and on the PW Torch VIP side of things. He has now moved over to Zach. Talk about your journey.
Well, first of all, it's awesome to be back. I love doing these shows and love talking with you, Wade, so it's awesome to be here doing the show again. So spent a lot of time at the Torch and grateful for all the opportunities to cover this business that I got there, and made a move to SE Scoops this summer. And I'm now the managing editor over there, working with a ton of really great contributors and doing some new stuff as far as curating news and also just writing editorials that I normally do and hosting podcasts that I normally do. So you can hear more of me there on Tuesday nights on the SE Scoops YouTube channel with the SE Scoops Pro Wrestling Podcast. We launched that in July of this year. So that is a brand new show that you guys can check out on Tuesdays. And also started a bit of a side hustle, Brass Ring Media, myself and fellow Torch contributor Tyler Sage. Just some extra podcast stuff, a little bit of a different vision, different tone. And if you're interested in how we talk about wrestling here, you're really going to like what we do there. I've taken the lead on how to do this the right way from you, Wade, and hopefully we're carrying that over and you can check us out and help out the cause and just hear how we're doing things over there. Just, you can search Brass Ring Media on YouTube and on Substack. So there's written and audio and video content as well.
Excellent. I taught you how to do plugs, didn't I? Or at least I was, you've learned.
You got it. Awesome. Get your stuff in, as
exactly.
Steve Austin would say. Right.
Yes, I was just going to say that's what I remember. Steve one time, he's like, I just go into automatic mode on his show. It's like this new audience. It's a big audience. So I did my plugs, and he's like, I could just see him looking at his watch, like, are you done yet? Jeez. So. But hey, we do a lot of stuff, and we cover a lot. So no, it's great to do a show with you again. And we tried to make it work a few other times, and various things came up. But I'm glad it worked out tonight for sure. So we've got a lot of people who are listening in. A lot of people who have called in to listen. Nobody else pushed one, by the way. I don't think it was like a show with a ton of obvious I need to push one and talk. But if you do. It's a short wait, so that's the bonus. Otherwise, Zach and I will keep talking about the show, and we got some emails. But you can give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, if you want to be on the show, push 1. That will flag you on the switchboard so that we know that you want to be brought onto the show and brought into the conversation. I did talk to my webmaster, and he did some checking. He goes, oh yeah, there's a ton of emails you've been getting to the show. The last, well, over time it's gotten worse and worse. Where the at PW Torch address was not auto forwarding the mail to my Gmail inbox, which is just how I tried to stay organized. So he says, yeah, you might want to go look at these emails that never got forwarded. So some of you have been sending probably very awesome emails that I have not been getting, on-site correspondent volunteers that I haven't been getting. So we're just gonna avoid that system and just encourage you to send to wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Doesn't sound as professional as at PW Torch, but frankly, it works better. So from now on, send your emails to the show at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. Those will come right to us. Even if they go in spam, I'm learning to check that regularly because some of you were going there. So I just want to let you know, and I apologize for that glitch. It sounds like it just started happening for reasons I don't even half understand over the last few months, increasingly so over time. So it was not you. It was us in most cases. Maybe you had a bad email, but I don't know. I haven't read them. So But most, I'm sure they were very good, and I apologize for not receiving them. So we got our act together, and we should get them going forward. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. All right, so let's get going on the show. We do have some callers now who want to join us, and we're going to start with Scott in Tampa, Florida, and then on deck is Steve in Baltimore. Jim, what's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, gentlemen, how's it going?
Good. Yeah, what do you think of Dynamite? Good to talk.
It's good to talk to you too, guys. It had been a while since I had called in, and I saw that Zach was you're gonna be your co-host today, and I'm like, you know, it's been a while. You know, the traitor is back. I'm joking, Zach. It's good to hear you back with the torch. Yeah, you
first
know,
caller, show first with caller. Oh, wow.
The show wasn't a terrible show. It wasn't A-plus show at all, but it was decent. It was good. A couple of things that stood out that I just want to get you guys' opinion on. I'm kind of scratching my head about, you know, the segment, but it's the MJF promo. I liked his passion, and then I liked the speech. The only thing I didn't like, you know, what he said was, mentioning WWE by name. Kind of wish that, you know, AEW and him in particular would just, like, stop, you know, mentioning, you know, just referring to the competition like that. I mean, I understand everyone knows and, you know, have this history, but, like, you always have to bring it up. But, I thought, his promo about Samoa Joe and putting him over and putting over the belt, I really liked it a lot. It was a fiery MJF promo that we haven't gotten in a while. But there's the whole devil mask situation, and that was a little odd and strange. I like how they explained it when it came back from break and kind of, you know, at least gave us some type of backstory to somewhat, believe. But it just seems real odd, like, to just throw that. And I don't know, it doesn't seem like it fits AEW, but maybe that's the new AEW these days with that, you know, hokey pokey stuff. But, so what do you guys think about that? And, you know, the whole MJF promo and then that, the post, I guess, promo angle with the with Samoa Joe and the folks in the mask.
Yeah, it was interesting. I liked that Shivani said it's like an inside job. Like, they're addressing how their system is being taken over, that the lights are going out and the video screen. Because
right.
That is, I mean, I like that attention to detail. I like that they're not pretending that we're just not supposed to think about it. Like, if it is an aggressive takeover of the show, you want everyone to be concerned about it, not act like, well, that's part of the show business. And boy, wasn't that a fun special effect that we all got together and decided would be entertaining for you. The idea that, hey, we got to figure out, we've got a traitor in the company who's making this happen. I mean, you can, sometimes it's better not to draw attention to stuff because there's no good explanation for it and you just draw attention to it. But I think that works for me. I know we have an email on this too, waiting in the inbox, so we'll get a listener opinion on it. But Zach, what did you think of it? I mean, if this is the devil gimmick, it's taken a different direction suddenly.
Yeah, I mean, it has. I think it very much has. Two thoughts really, and the first is kind of like more of a broad thought. I think MJF just is being pulled in too many directions right now collectively. And I think you saw that in the promo tonight where he's got to talk about Samoa Joe and he's got to talk about his injury and he's got to talk about the Ring of Honor tag title and he's got to talk about the world title. And then he's got the, you know, the devil thing going on. And
then he's got to insert something that'll make news and get a buzz. Like, he mentioned CM Punk by name and he mentioned
DNA. Right.
Like, you know, there's always that, little extra something thrown in. And sometimes it makes sense and sometimes it sort of feels like a little extra, but go ahead, Zach.
Yeah. Well, exactly though. And he just is juggling a lot. And, I think that he makes pieces of it work when he's out there, but rarely does it all come together. And so as far as the promo goes, like, I thought, you know, for the first time you actually kind of saw like a true, you know, babyface MJF out there. I mean, he was a little, it was almost like he was like, okay, CM Punk, I'll see your Raw promo and I'm going to raise you this AEW promo to talk about, yeah, you know, the three letters and all that. And, but then, you know, he's putting over Samoa Joe as if Joe is like this, you know, and Joe is all these things. He is this, he's a legend, you know, in the wrestling business. He has had a journey and has never really, you know, had gotten this type of opportunity before, but man, he laid it on really, really thick for, a guy who's going to be a heel and who's been threatening to, you know, break his arms and legs for the last 4 weeks. So again, it landed in terms of trying to frame Joe as a strong, viable, credible challenger to the world title. But in terms of like getting people to cheer MJF and boo Joe, I don't think it had that effect at all. It almost had the opposite effect of like, yeah, like, wow, Joe's getting this really great opportunity again. I'm excited to see that. He hasn't gotten that before. It kind of like, as I'm watching it, I'm just kind of nodding along and I'm going, should I be nodding along? And I think you want to fix that when it's involving the top star in your company in MJF. And then the devil storyline, I think a lot of people are going to look at this tonight and go, you know, you know, the devil himself or herself was not out there. So ergo, you know, there's an avenue to it being MJF now, or we can like put that back into the conversation that this is all him. I don't know how you really kind of, you know, put a bow on that long term, but that's how I kind of took it tonight, where they're trying to add like just more layers and more layers and more layers onto this as to who it is, while telling you that it's an inside job. I'd like that they handled those details, but so much has happened with this story. You know, they've attacked, you know, he's attacked Jay White, he's attacked the Acclaimed, he's threatened MJF, and now, you know, it's an inside job. So it's just, it has not been very of a consistent storyline, and maybe that's, you know, by design. We'll have to see how it plays out, and I'm still in that mode of like, let's see it play out. But they, instead of wrapping things up or starting to tie things together, they just seem to be kind of adding more and more, you know, confusion to this. And eventually I think you want to start, you know, defining what it is so people can care one way or the other.
I'm a fan of the world champion having a lot of people coming after him and a lot that he's juggling. I mean, I like that as a concept, that it's not just one wrestler at a time taking his turn going after him. And MJF has a lot coming at him. And you want, if that is happening, you want the champion to talk about it. But MJF's been all over the place in terms of trying to find a lane, and is he doing comedy in order to go viral and get crowd pops and show his comedy chops and his, you know, the buddy comedy movie. And then you've got, you know, the more serious side of him. And then you've got him trying to figure out how to be a babyface who's true to the heel that we once knew. And it just feels like he's going a lot of directions all at once. This was he wasn't yelling and overmodulating. He wasn't being crude. Like, there's times when he's just sort of like in the ring, it's sort of like kind of tawdry in some of the stuff that he does, just shoving his crotch in people's face or whatever. It's like I don't think his character needs that. And sometimes it's like, well, I'm just gonna be a rebel indiscriminately, and it doesn't serve him. I think he still seems like someone who's trying to figure out who he's gonna be, and I am sympathetic to what he's gone through. And there's some stuff that's self-inflicted, you know, trying to do work shoot stuff and talking about the contract coming due, which I just think was ill-advised and I wouldn't have done it. And I don't think it's easy to work. But he's had things not go right with CM Punk and the timing of that, Adam Cole's injury being the most recent one. There's just he's had this run of bad luck where it's like, okay, now we got to call an audible. And I think sometimes when things get thrown off track, what your plans are, you scramble and try really hard, but maybe in three or four or five different ways to make up for what went wrong that you were confident in. And I think we've seen that come through in some of his promos. Tonight was more focused. I was kind of shocked to hear TNA get mentioned by name. You know, CM Punk is fine. I mean, to me, mentioning CM Punk's name when you're trying to sell your feud in your pay-per-view, to me, seems like more of a distraction than it's worth. because now people aren't listening to you. They're thinking, oh, my God, he just said CM Punk thing. But it is the list of people he's beaten. So, I mean, it's not that big of a deal, obviously. You know, if you're going to list the people you beat, Punk's the guy you beat. It'd be weird to leave him out. But be cognizant of how now no one's thinking of what you're saying for the next 10 seconds because they're like, how did the crowd react? What does this mean? What will Punk think? Was that a dig or was it just a factual statement? It's just that's who CM Punk is. And when you hear his name on AEW now, it's like, whoa. So there's still a little bit of that, but this was a step in the right direction. You know, it was just this earnest, intense, prideful wrestler speaking to the fans clearly and honestly and bringing stuff up that not every wrestler wants to talk about, like mentioning things outside of the realm of AEW. But I think fans appreciate that. You don't want to do it just to score points. It has to have context that justifies it. But I think it did tonight. So this was a step in the right direction. I think it's less fun for him because I think he's so creative and just itching to try new things and show his range of what he can do. But, you know, like I always said, if Steve Austin could juggle or Triple H could play the banjo, it doesn't mean that would have helped their characters. You know, just because you can do something or you'd like to show that doesn't mean it always helped your character. And I think MJF's been doing a lot of things on as he's trying to find himself. But if he's going to be the top centerpiece world champion in a national cable company, I think he should figure out what that lane is and choose it and narrow down what he does and play that role more consistently. And, you know, he wasn't pandering to fans. I did think it came across as like I said on the Fix this week, I came across like pathetic. But I preface saying it sounds too harsh, but I just couldn't think of a better word. But like, there were times where it's like crowds behind you, but not as much as they used to be. And then he would just like start doing what John Cena might do, you know, like, hey, that's the loudest you can get. Come on, people, whatever he's doing to get more crowd cheers. Yeah. And it was like, no, that's beneath the MJF character. Beneath him is maybe a better phrase than pathetic. It's just like, have the confidence to not need the fans cheers. That's what makes you popular, is not needing that. So it was interesting watching his promo. I think, you know, I watch, I'm like, this is a good talking point for the post show. It does seem like he dialed back and kind of corrected course a little bit, but I got to see a stretch of weeks where they kind of figure out where they're going. But, you know, the fact that Wardlow's out there with three other guys in masks, I assume, you know, beating him up when the devil has been, you know, I think Britt Baker, who is orchestrating Adam Cole pretending to be MJF's friend, waiting for the right moment to strike. Maybe not, you know, but if that was it and now it's this, what a, you know, sharp turn to have them just show up and beating him up. So it's just like they took it in a new direction. So yeah. I don't know what to, yeah, I'm not sure what to say yet.
Real quick, so you mentioned Britt Baker. And so an hour ago, Britt Baker tweeted, tonight's AEW Dynamite, MJF live promo time, 7 minutes. Christian Cage live promo time, 10 minutes. All of 2023 AEW Dynamite, Britt Baker live promo time, 0 minutes.
Yeah.
So, that could be Britt just, you know, disgruntled, of course, you know, which, you know, in AEW, that wouldn't necessarily surprise me that somebody feels like they could tweet something like that. However, I also think that it's an interesting timed tweet given the inside job rhetoric that we got tonight that like it could be somebody that's just disgruntled with AEW, that's the story, and you know, here's another clue. So that stood out as it crossed my feet as you were talking here, and then once you brought her up I was like, okay, this is a good time to reference that because you know, it is the first time we kind of heard that, like, it's an inside job, it's someone with access to I forget what Shivani said, the control room or whatever. You know, that I think is a notch in the column of Britt Baker.
Yeah. I'm when someone's talking on social media about their promo time, it's just sort of eye roll meta stuff for me. Like, I mean, wrestlers talking about getting TV time is not my favorite foundation for a storyline or a turn. I just don't think fans should be thinking about how TV promo time is distributed. I just don't think that should be introduced any more than, you know, if you're watching a movie and there's like a character like in the movie going, I want more screen time, or, you know, right. I want more close-ups, or I wish I had a monologue. But this guy, it's just like, it just takes me out of it. That's too meta for me. So I'm just not a fan of that, but it is a generational thing. In some cases, it's all people know. Like, they just think, well, that's what you do. It's like, no, that's what a lot of bad promoters that you grew up watching did. And a lot of bad ideas that didn't help draw money that have been put on TV, unfortunately. But that's really not the way pro wrestling works at its best. So I'm not a fan of that approach. Like, I'm going to turn heel on my company because they don't give me TV time. Like, the idea should be the company gives TV time based on a format of merit and you know, due cause. I can't think of the right phrase, but like, there's a reason for someone to have mic time because they have a match coming up, or they ask for it and they get it because they have something to say, like Christian tonight, and that kind of thing. But I don't know. Yeah.
No, I mean, you're 100% right. It stands out because it was right after, you know, that whole thing went down. So,
We'll see,
I'm with you. Sure. I mean, I'd rather have it, of course I'd rather have it to be just like, you know, a storyline that happens on television, because, you know, as you said, you can list out like the times, not just AEW, but other companies have tried like the meta, you know, stuff, I'm against the company type thing. And it's not a good track record in terms of like how it wrapped up in the end.
Scott, back to you. Anything we didn't address you brought up, or anything else you want to bring up?
I agree with a lot of both of you guys' points. MJF, the last time I called, I think, is when I was an on-site correspondent when they came here to Tampa in August. And at that time, you know, I mentioned that, you know, he was the most over babyface in the arena. And you know, and that they should, you know, move forward with just presenting him as a straight babyface. And boy, 3 months later, I want to eat my words, because I'm like, I now agree with Todd and with Tom Martin, what he was saying for a while, which is just that he thinks that better MJF is a heel MJF. And I won't necessarily just say that, but I would just say, I mean, I prefer him to be closer to who he was than what we've seen the last few months. And the storyline, you know, I want to believe it. I want to trust that they will deliver. But, man, I've had some bad experiences watching wrestling. We talk about some, you know, folks say, yeah, well, that's always been on wrestling. Well, I mean, some bad things have been done, like you said, Wade. It doesn't mean it needs to be repeated. But, like, it might have been like a month or so ago, I had a dream that this angle turned out to just be the aces and eights. And that was a terrible time. Sitting there watching that, you know, 10 years ago. And I just, I just don't have the trust. But, you know, we'll see how it plays out. I just hope, you know, it is a satisfying payoff. I don't have much else to talk about. I guess, you know, one last thing I want to ask you guys, you know, Zach, I haven't heard your opinion on, you know, the Timeless Toni Storm gimmick and with Mariah May. You know, that segment there with her going into Tony Khan's office. I was kind of confused a bit as to which Tony they were talking about, especially when just RJ going to his office.
Yeah.
Could mention that RJ City is a curator, Tony is a curator. So, like, I mean, I were expected to see, you know, Tony Khan or Mariah May turn into a different character, you know, to somewhat match up with Toni Storm. Like, what do you guys think of her? And Zach, you know, what do you think about the whole Toni Storm gimmick as a whole? And I'll leave you guys with that.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. By the way, you know, we a lot of people made fun of Vince McMahon for like, Shane Douglas comes in. Well-established name, former ECW champion, former dynamic dude with Johnny Ace. But he can't be Shane because we've got Shane McMahon, so he's got to be Dean Douglas. And on and on, you know, the not wanting two people with the same name, last name or first name for the most part. And now we're seeing why. Like Toni Storm, Tony Khan, and Christian Cage and Hangman Page, and Brian Cage and Christian Cage. And did I say Christian Page? Yeah, Christian Cage and Brian Cage. And it's just like
Lots of Adams.
I mean, I don't have to list them all, but Ethan Page and Hangman Page, I was thinking of. Like, there is something to, yeah, you had that name for years on the indie scene in front of crowds of hundreds, but we kind of just want some clarity and a fresh start. Let's let's shift it a little. It's not to screw up your indie dates in the future. It just is for clarity. Not a big deal, but you have to be. But do you think they did that on purpose, or because I literally thought they were talking about Tony Storm the whole time?
No, I did too. I really did too. I was real confused. But the thing is, I don't know that it was. I mean, the fact that it's Tony and Tony doesn't help. But I, to me, it was more of a indictment on the promo and like just the segment backstage in general that like nobody knew what the heck she was talking about. Like,
or it was but I'm not ruling out. Maybe it's people are thinking, oh, those people are dopes. It was obvious. They wanted to make you think it was Tony Storm, but it turned out to be Tony Khan. That's the joke. And if that's the case, not a very good joke.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I was like, okay, I could. There's some. I suppose I could see how you'd get there, but I still. Don't, that's not a. Yeah, it's not a. It's not a good joke. It's just kind of because again, it made me like want to go back and rewatch the whole thing. It's like what? Okay, I missed something here. What is she going in there for? What's happening? I didn't think that was particularly. You know, well, not that it was ever positioned as a high point of the show, but it definitely was something that left you going, huh? Instead of really getting behind whatever the heck she's doing.
And then Excalibur says, "I hope you didn't interrupt the meeting." And Shivani laughed, or vice versa. I'm not sure who said it. So they were sharing a laugh at not at Tony's expense, but sort of sending a message to viewers. Yeah, you don't want to walk in on Tony when he's out in a meeting, or he might flip out on you. Was there a lot of just joshing around and laughing with Shivani, Excalibur, and Taz tonight. They were like laughing at the gum falling out of Mark Briscoe's mouth, and then he just picked it up with his lips off the mat, and they lost it there. And I think there was
one of the notes I made. I made a note that like they seem like extra loose than usual. I don't know what was in the water out there tonight. Yeah. Up there, I guess they're near you guys. So I you know. But, yeah, they seem to, you know, extra laid back.
Yeah. Okay, so anything else you want to say about what?
Oh, real quick, the Tony Storm gimmick is like the – so I don't know. I have mixed feelings on this. I think it's an interesting – you know, it's an interesting gimmick. Like, it's an interesting thing that I think has a place on AEW television. And I think – early on with the gimmick, she was able to like connect what she's been doing with this gimmick with winning matches in the ring. And I thought like that's what made it like work for me early on. But it has gotten away from that the last couple weeks. I mean, she barely even mentions that she's the AEW Women's World Champion. Like, I think she has to keep it in that zone where you have to constantly connect it back to winning matches and being a champion in the ring, and the rest of it, you know, can be there, and like you can play that character. I mean, it's interesting, it's unique, and it's unique to AEW. But it has to revolve around her being the champion and her wanting to win matches and people chasing her down. So I hope they can get back to that. And if they do, I think it's a gimmick that can last. If they don't, you know, I think it's almost like, you know, acclaimed 2.0, where it gets really, really hot and really, really popular, and you get the belt on them, in this case on her, and then it fizzles out and it goes away, and you can't make money on it long term. And so I think both of those trajectories are possibilities at this point. But I think she's been able to thread that nicely. They just have to give her the opportunity to do it and force her to do that when she's cutting those segments. So, I mean, I give it a thumbs up for right now, but I just don't know how long.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Steve in Baltimore. Steve, thanks for your patience. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Good evening, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Good.
Was I the only one who thought, not just mentioning CM Punk, but that MJF took a shot at him when he mentioned that Samoa Joe isn't here to line his pockets after him? Punk on Monday night said, "I'm here to make money."
No, I hadn't even thought about that. That probably is. That seems like that was a shot. I mean, MJF's one to talk. You know, the bidding war of 24.
That's the other thing I thought about it too. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, AEW needs to be in the business of putting butts in seats and drawing TV ratings and sort of, in a sense, minding their own business. And I don't mean that in like a, like it's like they're being rude, but like literally when you think about minding your own business, I'm going to pay attention to my business. Like that's what they need to be focused on. And being the place that you go to have jaw-dropping OMG moments, well, I can't believe he said that. It's like, if everything else was working great, fine, maybe, but you probably wouldn't bother. But it just, come on. I mean, just focus on selling. Yeah, it comes across. It can, you want to be careful that you don't come across that it's just passive-aggressiveville and, you know, trying to just get people to gasp and go, I can't believe he said that. And it's like, just get in the business of getting people invested in your matches and your stories and your character. And selling tickets and drawing money. And it just, so it feels, yeah, score settling or receipt issuing or whatever. It's like, just send them a damn text. Zach?
Yeah, 100%. Look, I mean, you know, the 2008, 2009, you know, TNA took shots at WWE all the time. And it plays for maybe a few seconds where you're like, oh, that shot at WWE. And then it just goes away, especially when you don't follow it up with, you know, like really, really strong shows and really, really strong business. So it's like, it's just as like, all right, you know, it's a fun little game, I guess, but that's really all it is. And I just think, you know, you have other things to focus on than just doing that, especially MJF with all the things that he's trying to work into a promo. You know, it's kind of a needless shot. And yeah, it rang out to me, but you know, most people watching AEW probably just like don't see it for what it is. And so why is it on your television show?
Yeah. I mean, I just want AEW to just pick 6-8 people and put them on TV 6 out of 7 weeks invest in them and make them stars. You know, I mean, this is a show without Kenny Omega, without Don Callis, without the Young Bucks. I mean, we just list the people who aren't on the show, but it's just, you know, if you said, what's AEW about? It's like, I mean, it's, I guess it's more about MJF than anybody. And, you know, Tony Storm's getting consistent TV time right now, but with, you know, the downside of the tournament out of the gate was, okay, either this should be an elite, it should be a tournament of elite wrestlers with first-time matchups with surprising, clean, decisive finishes that makes news and puts this on the map as this annual tradition that's going to draw extra viewers. And it's just – that's not what it is. It's just they didn't go far enough with it. And so now it's sort of a substitution for traditional booking. And, again, it's a good tournament. Like, just because I don't say I love everything about it or because I don't think it's what I wanted it to be or hoped it would be and think it should be – doesn't mean it's not enjoyable. Like, you can actually have a nuanced discussion about it. It's enjoyable, but it is sort of a substitution for a Don Callis promo. Like, do we need Jay White losing to Jon Moxley in a tournament for belts that aren't needed in place of Don Callis cutting a promo? I mean, like, Hangman Page, you know, being a pres, like, there's just, I don't know what AEW is about. It just sort of flails around and puts on, you know, like a nice tour TV show with some highs and some lows. And it's about personal taste, what those highs and lows are. But
I think, like, you know, first of all, AEW has a lot of tournaments. You know, and so it's like, you know, and look, New Japan does too, but they're all a little bit different. Like, you know, you've got Best of Super Juniors, like that is one style. You've got the World Tag League, you've got the G1, all of those.
And their structure is completely different. They're not doing a weekly tour TV show with episodic storylines building the monthly pay-per-views or quarterly pay-per-views. It's different. So the tournament is more part of their sports-like traditional presentation. But go ahead,
You literally read my mind because that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, I was just going to say, like, that's not how, you know, that's not episodic television. You know, they go on the G1 tour and they do those matches and –
in fact, by read your mind, you meant stole my thunder, but go ahead. You have a nice way of putting it.
Yes. I'm biting my tongue over here. The dump button is about to get pushed. But yeah, I mean, it's totally not the same. And so, like, when you're trying to, like, hook people week in and week out to watch your show, you know, I think you have to even go further than the G1 does in terms of making the tournament seem like the biggest, the absolute biggest thing that you're doing. And even then, you still need to cultivate stories within it, like you were talking about at the top of the show with promos and interviewers. And look, the G1, you know, they still do that. They have press conferences after each show, you know, where the guys right after the match, they go back and they talk about what happened. So, you know, yeah, there's just a lot of things missing. And one thing that stood out when you talk about, you know, the like building around 6 or 7 stars, like watching the show tonight, and especially in the tournament format, I can't really put my finger on it at this moment, you know, here just an hour out from the show, like why the tournament format has made this like stand out this way. But it really put into focus, like you're watching a lot of wrestlers here, and you're watching a lot of, you know, maybe guys that are close to being stars, but like there's not a big difference right now between John Moxley and, you know, and someone like I don't know, I don't want to say Mark Briscoe, but like they're all presented in a way that's, hey, this is John Moxley could lose to Mark Briscoe. John Moxley could lose to Jay Lethal. I mean, Jay Lethal kicked out of his finisher, the paradigm shift, like today. It's like, man, like that, you know, you take some of that stuff away, it's hard to like build it back where if you ever try to really, you know, put the company on the shoulders of these guys, you can do it successfully when, you know, they've gone through all of these matches and all these tournaments, you know, 50-50 back and forth with guys that they really shouldn't have in the name of let's just have a good match together.
Steve, back to you.
The guy who I think set the best example of what they should be doing is a 74-year-old talking about another 60-year-old. I thought Ric Flair had the best promo of the night, and it was like the first time an AEW promo has actually made me excited to see a match. I shouldn't say that, but I thought tonight he stood out as what I look for in promos is what makes me excited about things. What did you guys think of Flair?
Yeah, I mean, mixed feelings. I mean, I want Flair back in a suit talking in a dignified way instead of like the kid who wouldn't grow up frat boy wearing, you know, the fashionable old guy outfit right now and being a little unhinged. And this was a pullback from that, you know, as much as I think Flair is capable of at this point. So there are aspects that I liked it, but I still just long for that. The dignified character instead of the guy who sometimes seems kind of pathetic and desperate to just be bombastic and unhinged. But I've been saying he's been around a long time, occurred a long time. I've been saying that since like the late 90s with him. I mean, I think he took a different direction from the guy that I grew up reading about in wrestling magazines and seeing as the NWA champion. And I think he could still be that person, you know, more Nick Bockwinkel-esque, who never changed in his approach, or Lou Thesz. And so there's aspects of Flair now that make me a little sad watching him, even tonight, just because of the outfit, and there's still some of that you know, zany frat boy bombast that just, I think, kind of pollutes what could be this dignified elder statesman legend figure that would have, I think, served the Sting promo better. But it's sort of like the tournament. I don't want to say that something isn't what I think would be excellent. It can still be good. My favorite moment was Sting talking about, just like this aside, like, oh yeah, that was the first time in television history that 45 minutes went by without a commercial break for something sports related. He's like, but I don't really care about that. I'm not sure why I brought that up. And I'm just like, oh my God, that's so Sting. It's so Sting to just go off on some tangent and then just say what he doesn't have to say, which is, but I don't even care about that. Why am I talking about it? I just chuckled because, you know, Sting hasn't made it through one promo without like losing his train of thought or going on some sort of weird sidebar. Maybe it's part of his charm. But Zach, what did you think of Flair and Sting? I mean, stripping aside, there's almost nothing in Flair's background and dressed like or worn that wouldn't have made it at least somewhat cool that in 2023, Tony Schiavone is interviewing Sting and Ric Flair on TBS. Like, I mean, just it's hard to completely like erase all coolness of that. Cause that is pretty cool having a, know, 60-something and a 70-something talking about their match in the 80s, but the 60-something guy is going to be having a retirement match that the 70-something guy is talking about, and people are still wooing and caring. Zach.
Yeah, that you're right. That part was cool. And I had mixed feelings about it too. Like I think that what was so sad about the Ric Flair part of this was there were moments where you looked at what he was saying just tonight and you could see that, like, oh man, like that there's something that's still there. I mean, I think he still, you know, understands the business and knows how to, you know, get a match over, and he just doesn't do it enough, and he leans to the crazy Ric Flair caricature, and we saw it right after with the wooing and like the shadow boxing that he was doing. It's like, dude, what are you doing, man? Like, just cut the good promo, cut the crap out, and just, you know, just can you just turn the volume down? I mean, come on. And that's what I was left thinking. That, you know, there were shades of some really good stuff in there, and I think that, you know, that's why, you know, the caller here, you know, says like, hey, this is the best part of the show, because there pieces of it were really effective in talking about the impact of Sting and what the last match means and all that. And then it just was drowned out by caricature Ric Flair. And, you know, like you said, that's the avenue he went on. But man, it reeks of desperation and it's not all that fun to watch either.
Steve, back to you.
That's all I had tonight. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, our number 347-215-8558. Our on-site correspondent, by the way, said Rampage got off to a delayed start, breaking news, after Dynamite because, and I quote, Ric Flair ended up cutting a rambling promo to the fans of Minneapolis.
No.
Who's gonna cut his mic or get a hook or whatever, you know, to try to play him off if Rick decides he's just gonna, you know, cut a live podcast in the middle of the ring in Minneapolis? But apparently, we'll hopefully find out from Tom in a few minutes more details on that. But the Rampage taping running a little late because of it. So we're still hoping to hear from Tom if the show wraps up before the end of the night. Hope we get a chance to talk to him. But you can call us in the meantime, 347-215-8558. Push 1 if you want to be on the show. I want to get to an email here, and James in Clemson is up first, and he says, I'm really enjoying this Continental Classic tournament. Something about the interference being banned from ringside has really raised my investment of what I'm watching. The main event tonight was quality, an OBS match that was unpredictable. I've become a real fan of Swerve in recent months, and I was not a fan in the beginning. Whoever is in charge of the bleeps during the Copeland segment will probably be looking for a job tomorrow. Is this what AEW would be like without QT Marshall now? I don't know. I don't know if QT was there tonight, but he's apparently finishing his dates through the end of the year. But the story of the night for me is Sting in Greensboro. I can't wait, as I will be 100% there for that. A few guesses for his opponent. Darby, obviously. Jericho, some WCW ties. DDP, long shot, but WCW ties. Goldberg, please God, no. Any ideas on your end that are not so obvious? That's James and Clemson. Yeah, some people would say one of the bigger stories is just that Sting's last match is going to be in Greensboro Coliseum. And I think that's you know, very cool. I mean, I would have liked to have seen – I shouldn't say that. I think Greensboro is a great place for it. Having Sting do it at Wembley, you know, would have been cool. Just like, you know, just this really large, larger-than-life setting. But yeah, the history of Greensboro and, you know, maybe Flair being involved in some way, walking him to the ring or doing, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, I think this is one of those times where, like, Tony Khan's, you know, fandom really helps because, you know, like there's just so much history there and they're going to be able to get a lot of mileage out of that. So I think that was a really cool choice to make as far as venue.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, he mentioned the tournament. I don't know much to add, but good to hear James is enjoying it, and I think no interference is a good step in the right direction, but not if it just gets substituted for roll-up finishes or low blows. But, yeah, Sting's opponent, who's on your list that you think are possible / likely and other ones that you just would like to see? And do you want it singles or tag?
I would like to see – I mean, oh, man, that's a – I think, like, if I were to fantasy book Sting's, you know, retirement match, obviously it would be a singles match, because I think that that's just, you know, he's been a singles act for most of his career. Like, that's where he's, you know, made his money and made his name. So I think, just like, generally speaking, I of course would rather that see, you know, a singles match. That said, he's 65 years old, I think, and I just don't think you want to risk it. I don't think you want to risk, you know, billing, you know, a big Sting send-off retirement match, and then for whatever reason having him go out there and it not being what he wants it to be, singles match perspective, because he's 65 years old. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, there's so many variables at that point that I think the safer play is to, you know, you've told a really good story with him and Darby. They, you know, seem like a tag team that has gelled together. There's a personal relationship there. They've told that story for a long time in AEW about just their partnership and relationship. You know, to me, that's a viable way to send Sting off. It's not just random tag team match because, oh, we want to protect Sting. That is what you're doing. But with Darby there, I mean, I think it's much more, you know, much more realistic that you can end his career that way. And again, it's just so much safer. And he just doesn't have to be responsible for carrying as much. And I just don't think that's the wrong call. I think that's the right move. Man, as far as who they're going to wrestle from a tag team perspective, like, that is really that's the question. Like, I kind of look at, you know, and they're not there yet because they really haven't set the table for this at all. But it seems to me that, like, you know, Sting is going to ride off into the sunset on a win at this point. Like, I think the goodbye is being treated that way. So I wonder if you try to tell a story here where they chase the tag titles, and, you know, you get in there with Big Bill and Ricky Starks, and, you know, Ricky Starks gets a lot of FaceTime with Sting, you know, as far as a guy that he's going toe-to-toe with on promos in the build. And so he gets a little bit of a rub there. And, you know, Sting and Darby get to end their tag team as tag champions. And to me, that's like a nice way to kind of wrap everything up on a positive note. Now, that match certainly does not have any kind of, like, historical ties to Sting's career or anything of that nature. Like, to me, it just would be like, hey, let's send Sting off holding gold with Darby to end his career in the Greensboro Coliseum. Like, I'd be totally, totally fine with that. So, I, you know, with not very many good options coming to me right now, that is high on my list as a way you can send him off nicely.
What are like three teams that jump that you think, okay, those would be ones we'd consider?
Okay, so I got so Starks and Big Bill. Mm-hmm. Gosh, I mean, I think that, you know, they've went to this match already, but I don't know that it's completely unfinished either. So I think there's something you could do with some combination of Christian, you know, and that team. I don't know, maybe even like if Edge, you know, goes over to the Patriarchy at some point, you could do Edge and Christian against Darby and Sting. And then, like, another one that I don't love, but that would certainly make more from, you know, headlines, would be FTR too. I think that, you know, especially Greensboro Coliseum, you know, you could, mm-hmm. I think you could spin that nicely as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking Edge and Christian or Copeland and Christian. I don't know, you know, exactly how they get there from where they were tonight. Obviously Copeland saw Christian's con for what it was, or actually he didn't. He acted like he did, but he seemed like he was actually taking the words to heart. But maybe he was like, I don't trust this guy, but he's pulling at my heartstrings too. And, you know, there is a background here, and it makes me sad what he's become, what a scumbag he's become, because, you know, these are real memories that are causing me to well up with emotion. Either way, I mean, I guess you could say we got a little window into the idea that Copeland would like to find a reason, a rationalization to believe Christian. It's hard to imagine how you get there, but yeah, Edge and Christian against Sting and Darby jumped out as, if they've got a story arc and they can tell it, I mean, that's a cool match with a lot of history to it. And this gets to, like, the segmentation of AEW and everybody kind of on an island. You know, there was the Cody verse, but there's, you know, the the Blackpool Combat Club verse. There's the EVP verse. There's Miro and CJ. there's two people who are really big stars in AEW who are turning heel and would be great bump takers for them, who are the Young Bucks. And they're the co-founders and the EVPs, and they should be in the ring taking wild bumps and doing crazy spots and creating a bunch of movement and athleticism with Darby, and then also selling for Sting. And it should be a moment that makes the Young Bucks, I know they're, you know, mid to late 30s now, so it's not star building time there, but like the fact that that just isn't the obvious, like an obvious match to go to. Well, they're heel, they're the top team, they're great. They absolutely could co-headline a pay-per-view in that match. And it's fresh. It's not dragging something on a long time or forcing. Like, I know what you say about FTR and Greensboro, but it's like, at some point you don't want to just do things because it's cool for people who have been following wrestling through newsletters for 40 years. Like, there's times when you got to do what's really good for business right now. And if it happens to overlap with something that's a cool nod to history, great. But to me, the heel Young Bucks just obnoxiously. I mean, Matt can be obnoxious, and Nick in a different way is obnoxious in the background. I think you can have those guys like, and again, it's not the mindset of AEW, but from a booking standpoint, or even the Bucks, at least not consistently, they should spend 2 months being so obnoxious that you can't wait for Sting and Darby to beat them up and embarrass them and show them that whatever they're claiming they're going to do to ruin Sting's farewell isn't going to happen. And everyone knows Sting and Darby are going to win, but you want to watch it. You want to see the Bucks get what they got coming for being, you know, big mouths, loud mouths, and so disrespectful. So that's my pick is the Young Bucks. If what Brandon Cutler is saying isn't true and that they're just going to go away for, you know, who knows? I mean, honestly, who knows where their head's at and where their health is, mental and physical, and the politics of everything. I mean, but I would, they're on my list of people that I wish were on TV every week and coming, you know, spending hours on the phone with Tony during the week and coming to TV with ideas and plotting out 6 and 12 and long story arcs and really just being like, I'm going to tune into Dynamite because I want to see what the Young Punks, or the Young Bucks do this week. Yeah, I know, totally. But they're punks. You know, I mean, it's like the actual small P version of that. And that should be a selling point to tune in to Dynamite every week. And you know, like the Bloodline was for SmackDown. You know, you want to see what the Bloodline are doing. And, you know, with Raw, in theory, it's variety of things. But go with that.
I think that, like, I wish I could undo my answer and give that answer. That is the match that it should. That's what should be the match. That, I mean, especially now that you've laid the groundwork for the Bucks turning heel, that, you know, even makes more sense because then it's not just novelty, you know, Young Bucks against Darby and Sting. You have an actual heel Young Bucks team that you've like set the table for months in advance, you know, prior to this match going down on March 3rd. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's telling that I just glossed over that option because, you know, frankly,
it should
like,
be the obvious one. And yeah, it's your fault. It's because of everyone is in their little verse, their little island.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But like that really should be the match. I mean, that if done right, that is a special match. And again, like you said, not just special because, oh, it's the Young Bucks and Sting. It's special because, yes, okay, it's Young Bucks and Sting, but it's also special because we've been telling this story of these nasty Young Buck guys for 3 months, and now, you know, they're going to try to retire Sting, period. And what's going to happen? Like, that absolutely should be the route that they go. I think you might be onto something, Wade. They may know that.
I've changed my mind. I think it should be Miro and Andrade. No, I'm kidding.
Dark Order. Yeah.
Actually, you know what? Yeah. I mean, if it's Miro and a partner, I'd vote for that over over some other ideas too. Like, and again, just because I just want Miro to, you know, have a chance to show what he can do in AEW. But that, you know, that involves Miro being willing to play. All right. We have Tom from St. Paul joining us after attending Dynamite tonight. Tom, welcome. I had mentioned your email that Flair, he would have been with us sooner if not for Flair's promo. I want to hear about that. Welcome.
Hey there. Can you guys hear me all right?
Yeah, we sure can.
All right. Excellent. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good, good. Whenever I talk to somebody with like a Minnesota accent or kind of the way Minnesotans talk, it brings me back to my KFAN radio days where it's just one person after another talking like us Minnesotans do. It's not quite Fargo, but it's you know, we have our own distinct voice. And Tom from St. Paul is like, I think a third of callers on Sports Talk Radio are Tom from St. Paul for the last 40 years in this market. So it's great to have you on, Tom. So first of all, we'll get into more serious stuff. Well, I don't know. It's not that it's unserious, but tell us about the Flair promo and what he had to say and how long it lasted and how the crowd responded to it.
Oh, the crowd loved it. I mean, you had Sting, Tony Schiavone, and Ric Flair in the ring, basically just reminiscing, talking about being on the first Nitro and, you know, Ric Flair working in the AWA, coming into the business. It was basically just the three of them reminiscing, having a good time. So I don't think that promo is actually going to make air.
But, well, it'll make social media, because I'm sure someone recorded it and is uploading it now.
Oh, for sure. But Ric Flair worked in his 18 to 28 no husbands or boyfriends line at the end. So that's slightly awkward.
Oh,
wow. Good grief.
About how long did they talk, by the way?
It was probably 10 minutes all said. Part of that is two of the three of them are not moving very quickly to and from the ring, but Tony and Rick are moving pretty slow nowadays.
Yeah.
But
yes. How over was Ric Flair in front of that crowd?
Oh, he was super over. Everyone loved him. And he's a legend, you know, issues aside, it's still, people aren't going to be able to see Ric Flair in a wrestling ring many more times, especially not with Sting and Tony Schiavone. So he gets extra grace for that, you know, at least in the audience.
Yes,
mind,
he does.
So.
Yes, he does. So from a crowd standpoint, we got a pretty good view on TV with a wide shot. It looked like the lower bowl, not counting this part cut off by the stage, was half full, half empty, and the upper deck completely blacked out and the floor full. But we didn't get to see, like, kind of behind the hard cam. So how did it fill out? Hey, WrestleTix had them around 4,400 tickets as of yesterday. Did it seem like there was a big walk-up and more than that? And did it feel empty and cavernous, or did they kind of arrange it and stage it well enough that it felt intimate but engaging? Yeah.
I would say probably 85% of they had listed as available were full, you know, so it was a decent crowd, not super cavernous or anything, definitely some empty patches, but all in all, for what they set it up for, I think it was a decent turnout.
Yeah. Was there anybody in the upper deck?
No, nobody in the upper deck, really nobody on the hard cam side.
I had a wrestling show once. I had seats I didn't like. I can't remember why, the angle or whatever. And I just went, it was a Target Center. I went and sat in the upper deck, and like security guy came and said, this section's not even open. You got to go down to the lower deck. And I was like, I just wanted to be alone so I could take notes and you know, and watch the show and do my thing. So yeah, we got kicked back to our lower deck seats. I mean, I had the front row in the upper deck. It was a good spot, you know, right opposite the ring. But yeah, they're like, no, we don't even have security up here except for me. So it's like, oh, sorry. All right. This wasn't a like super star studded show in terms of who appeared on Dynamite. Moxley was the biggest name, and Christian and Copeland, you know, were right there, not wrestling, but you know, they were there. And then, you know, Jay White and Swerve Strickland are, you know, semi big within the AEW universe. Did it feel like it was missing stars, and were there any other appearances off camera of some big names?
No one really off camera. Bryan Danielson, you know, made his entrance. Everyone kind of knew he wasn't wrestling, so didn't get a huge reception. Top Flight, though, got the biggest reception of the night. I mean, not by a large margin, but it was definitely Top Flight was, biggest reaction for sure.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah. How about MJF? Obviously, you know, the world champ, and he's on, you know, most weeks. How'd the crowd react to him, and how did it compare to your expectations for him based on, you know, the kind of weird journey his character has been on in the last couple of years?
He was well received, but I wouldn't put him in the top five.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
That's not good. How do you feel about him, Tom? Like, how do you feel about MJF right now?
I mean, so I don't watch that much AEW. I mostly follow with you guys and Jason Powell. So I don't have cable at home, so I just follow you guys, your guys' stuff. So I'm maybe a little less jaded on him than others are. You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, from what I've read and heard you guys talk about, I definitely get why people aren't super enthusiastic about him. But I definitely thought it was a more serious promo he did today, which definitely helped the...
Yeah, it was more narrow and focused, in terms of who he is and what his character is and what he's talking about. Did he hold the crowd's – this sounds like a low bar, but did he hold the crowd's attention as he was talking, kind of marching through Samoa Joe's history? I mean, Samoa Joe's had some nice matches here that I've seen, but he's not like, you know, Ric Flair or, for that matter, Top Flight, you know, in terms of being local. And MJF's talking about TNA and his history. Was a crowd into that? Or did it seem like they were kind of waiting for him to get to the next thing?
I think everyone kind of knew Joe was coming out, so they were kind of just waiting for that to happen. You know, they were interested, but it's also like, okay, when is Samoa Joe showing up and what is he going to do to you?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Yep. The smart wrestling crowd in this market. How about the Continental Classic matches? Not a lot of backstory to any of them other than the stakes of the tournament. Not a lot of personal rivalries. The main event went about 17 minutes. The others went 11 or 12. It wasn't set up with like real traditional strong babyface heel dynamics in any of them. How was the crowd engagement during those?
During the main event, everyone was rooting for Swerve. I mean, after Dante Martin, Swerve Strickland was probably got the second biggest reaction of the night as a babyface, even though he's, you know, probably shouldn't be labeled a babyface. Everyone liked Mark Briscoe. He got a good reaction and people were behind him. And then everyone was rooting for Moxley. So.
Yeah. The Moxley Jay Lethal thing has a strong babyface heel dynamic, but not a backstory to it. And it's not like Jay is, I mean, he's just kind of part of a clown show. He's not anybody with heat on him. But yeah, we were just, you know, talking about the tournament's cool in concept and it's delivering good matches. But having the three main matches of the whole AEW experience tonight in person being not really feuds, but a way to accumulate three out of a possible 15 points. It lacks some of the things that makes pro wrestling work. So the novelty of it is there, but yeah, I was curious if it came across as, you know, the crowd didn't quite have that type of passion that they do when it's, you know, Christian doing his heel bit or, you know, whatever. And speaking of which, what was the reception like for Christian and Adam Copeland?
Everyone was booing Christian. It was, he had nuclear heat. The one fun part was when Christian said, "You grew up with a single mother," and the crowd just had all sorts of fun with "Who's
they
your
did,
daddy"
yes.
type chant. So I don't know how well that came across on TV. Adam Copeland's ending line got a huge reaction. So the ones the censors didn't catch, according to your report.
Zach, go ahead and ask Tom a question about his experience tonight.
Yeah, so I want to circle back to the tournament. Did you sense anything in the audience, like either in just before the show went on the air, or maybe like, you know, lines in the concourse? Like, was there any buzz like around the tournament itself that like the audience was there, you know, and they got to see like three matches in this tournament, or was it more so just, oh, it's, you know, potentially three good matches? Just trying to gauge like what the, you know, the in-building intrigue is for this tournament, just holistically.
I would say of the people I heard talking about it, it would be, you know, a group of three or four where one or two are really into it and they're trying to explain the round robin format to the rest of their group. You know, so they go with their, you know, two guys into the product, went with their buddy who's not really following, and it's like, okay, here's what's going on with it. But they also did, before the show started, a longer video package with highlights from the Collision and last week's Dynamite with some promos from the wrestlers and stuff. So that helped as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then I'm curious, like when the Devil kind of angle went down with MJF, did anything else happen like in the building? I mean, I'm sure you guys got like the same typing that we got, but did anything else happen in the building that we may have not seen like during that angle?
The only thing I could think of that maybe didn't make camera was MJF and Joe kind of barking at each other after MJF accepted the tag team match.
Okay.
I just don't know what the commercial for that.
Yeah, we think we got a little bit of that, but nothing overdone or anything, but it doesn't sound like there was anything significant off camera either. And then lastly, it was just more on Samoa Joe. MJF kind of talked him up in a way that, for me watching it, I was like, man, like, you know, you're giving me a lot of reasons to get behind Joe. Was he treated as a heel or mixed or babyface? Like, how do you grade where he's at right now opposite MJF?
I would say the crowd tonight treated him like a babyface. There was a bunch of Joe's going to kill you chants, you know, big reaction when he came out for the save. I mean, he was definitely over as a baby face tonight.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Tom, anything else from Dynamite before we get into some spoiler notes from Rampage?
Let me just look here. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, so go ahead and fill us in on what happened on Rampage, and people can hit fast forward a minute or two if they want to avoid it.
Yeah, so first match was the 8-man tag team with Daddy Magic, Angelo Parker, Dark Order versus Orange Cassidy, Beretta, Danhausen, and Hook. Orange Cassidy's team won in about 10 minutes. Yuta came out for commentary, so from what I could tell in the building, it looks like they're setting up a Yuta versus Hook program.
Mm-hmm.
Cal's family beat three local wrestlers in about a minute, and then Cal is called out the Golden Jets. The six-woman tag match, Sheeta, Sky Blue, and Chris Stanlander beat Anna Jay, Ruby Soho, and Soraya. And then Pentagon, Vikingo, and Commander Brie, Brian Cage, and the Workhorsemen in about 11 minutes.
Cool. Tom, thank you. Is there anything else you want to add from your experience tonight at the show?
So, one odd and funny thing. So when we did not get the Ric Flair Sting video package you guys saw on TV.
Oh.
So during that whole thing. I assume it was because Sting and Ric Flair were coming out later, is my best guess.
Yeah.
But so during that, Justin Roberts was talking about the ring crew guys, you know, and just saying who they were and all that stuff. And the head ring crew guy's name is Bob, and Bob got chants pretty much during every commercial break. And,
oh, boy.
God. it was pretty hilarious, and you could tell from what I saw that he was touched by it, so it was pretty cool. And they had him do It's Time for the Main Event before the Rampage main event.
Oh wow, cool. Did Justin Roberts engage with the crowd otherwise during the show?
I mean, he did the same thing he's done previously where he's sitting there reading signs, talking to fans, just kind of making small talk during commercials and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, Tom, thanks. You had a good time. Is it something you'd go back to next time they're in town?
I mean, I've gone to 3 of the 4 shows they've had in Minnesota, and it's gotten me to cross the river into Minneapolis every time, so.
They are two different. Does it bother you when something's in St. Paul and on national TV they say we're in Minneapolis?
Yes. Without a doubt.
People outside. People think I'm the only one making a big deal out of it. It's like they're two separate towns with their own history and their own pride, and St. Paul, you know, has to deal with that. So, cool. Well, enjoy your if you haven't already, enjoy your trip across whatever bridge you're crossing to get back to the St. Paul side of the Twin Cities.
All right. Well, enjoy the rest of your night, gentlemen.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Back to emails, and then we'll wrap up here. We'll kind of zip through these. We're running long. No shock. Shane Brooklyn says, Christian and Adam Copeland has had a very enjoyable feud. Copeland's change in attitude last couple weeks have really helped with the intensity of the feud. Thought they had a perfect go-home segment with an appropriate go F yourself to close it out. And unlike when Christian said it, Copeland actually wasn't censored. I'd say that was a happy accident because it made the segment even better. I don't know. I mean, there's some accidents that help but can cause more headaches than are worth. And people knew what he would say even if they believed it. But MJF enjoyed a very good segment. More of a no-nonsense MJF is always welcomed. Joe's had a terrific last few months, and I'm pretty sure he's about to be world champ too. Interesting. Love the devil mask stuff tonight. Build some nice anticipation for next week. Interesting comment from Shay. Do you think MJF was laying the groundwork? This will sound like a negative framing of it, but to sort of give himself a little credit for being big enough to use his clout to coordinate with Tony Khan that this is the moment Samoa Joe should finally get the world title opportunity that has not been afforded him so far, which is crossing a line a little bit into, you know, he should have been booked to win, but I guess you can say it was just he wasn't given opportunities as often as he should have. Obviously, he's been ROH world champ and TNA world champ, but, you know, in terms of the higher end WWE or WCW titles. He wasn't around for WCW. He didn't have a chance at those. So is this MJF kind of going, yeah, I'm going to be that guy. I want my history to be, I did a job for Samoa Joe and passed the title on him.
I mean, a little bit, I think it is. Yeah. I mean, and I don't know that it's like so cut and dry like that, but I think, you know, it just seems like they leaned into tonight, MJF, kind of putting over Samoa Joe in that way where fans can nod along with him and go, yeah, that MJF, that guy knows what he's talking about. Joe does need more opportunities. It's a little too meta for me, you know, as far as it being a part of a story goes. But I mean, I think absolutely, like, because otherwise, why would you frame, you know, your heel rival that way? I don't know why that would be. So it, like, I don't want to say it was like cheap babyface heat tonight, but like, he kind of knew the crowd he's playing to, and people will appreciate someone out there praising Samoa Joe. So, I think, you know, it clearly was part of the mission tonight, I think.
The main masked man looked a lot like Wardlow. His stand and build was very familiar. Yeah, I don't think they're trying to hide that. Although the announcers, of course, can't connect those dots. Then the very next person we see after the masked man segment is Wardlow's entrance in what looked like fresh hat head hair. It's just frizzy, staticky hair from being under a mask. Happy to see him get more of a match tonight, too. Because of his build, he really has one of the prettiest sentons in the business. Do you think they were trying to hide that it was Wardlow, or kind of thinking, no, this is we just want you to know?
Oh, man, I'm glad this came up, because I don't think they were trying to like let clue people in on that's who it was. But because it didn't really make sense for them to do so in that exact moment, like, I don't think they were going for like any kind of reveal there. And they've done so much with the storyline that the reveal of all this, I think, has to be a bigger moment than just, oh, we think that might be Wardlow, maybe, possibly. Mm-hmm. That said, I mean, you just frankly have to be more buttoned up than they were tonight in terms of who's under those masks, and then, you know, have someone look at Wardlow's hair before he goes out. Like, this is not rocket science. Like, you have to be more careful with that. Like, this is a – like, it's a big angle. Like, AEW doesn't do this type of stuff very often where you have this, like, week-to-week mystery that's gone on for, you know, a good month plus now. Around your world champion, MJF, who's the biggest star that you have in the company. Like, you have to be more buttoned up with that. You have to be more careful so that, you know, people don't have the conversation we're having right now until you're absolutely ready for them to have it. And I just think tonight, you know, it didn't make sense for them to tease who it was, but they certainly did because they just did not have the loose ends tied up. Like the hair thing, like that was crazy to me that fell under the radar as something that they couldn't be bothered to just fix, even though it impacts one of the biggest things that's happening week to week on their show.
Yes. totally. He says the three tournament matches delivered tonight as well. Rush seemed to get hurt, but he powered through, and it didn't hurt the match. Rush is slowly becoming one of my favorites. His aggression really comes through in his offense. During the main event, they announced 5 minutes left, and they had me believing a draw was coming, so it was a nice surprise that Swerve picked up the win. Swerve is becoming undeniable. The guy is a star. And happy to see Dante back. He looked awesome out there. Can't believe he's back so soon after the way his foot had turned. He doesn't even seem hesitant out there either, which is a great sign. Thumbs up tonight. The show flew by. Zach, what do you think about Rush and the pros and cons of pushing him, like at a top level? Yeah.
So, I mean, I think for right now, Rush is like right where he needs to be, like as far as like his push goes. That said, I think he's one of the more, at least for me, one of the more enjoyable watches in terms of like matches go, because he is just so damn intense in there. Like it's almost refreshing in certain ways, just because it contrasts other styles on the show that are more, you know, I don't know, dance-like for lack of a better way to phrase it. Like, Rush is like, I mean, he looks like he's in there to hurt you. And I think that plays well for him. I think it plays well for the show overall. This doesn't mean, you know, launch him into the main event anytime soon, but in this middle of the card role, like, I think it's a good, solid spot for him as long as he keeps agreeing to do jobs when you want him to. But he does have an intensity that just resonates with me. It kind of jumps off the page in certain moments. So, they got, you know, they have him right where they want him, I think. And I think that's okay. That's a good place to be on the show.
All right. Steve from Baltimore called but emailed. He goes, what would you think of Sting's last match being against Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal? No.
Yeah.
Jeff Jarrett's had his moments, but I don't, you know, in his career, but I don't think he's a good fit for AEW right now. And I think people would be very let down if the you know, kind of mid-card clown show that is Jeff Jarrett and company was the last thing that Sting got to do in the ring.
100% agree. Yeah, that'd be I think that would be a very, very big disappointment and just not worthy of the hype that they're giving this Sting, you know, kind of goodbye tour either. I mean, yeah, they've put a lot of oomph behind it. And so it'd be a travesty to blow it off that way.
Yep. All right. Jason from St. Louis emailed and said, I'm sending this at the start of the last match. The last match will end at a time limit draw. So you can't get too sure of yourself, can you? Am I watching AEW or WWE, Edge versus Christian, which is going to be on free TV next week with 1 week build, or WCW because of Sting and Flair, with Flair saying back in their day, they didn't rehearse. That was a weird thing to throw out there. The first two tournament matches were predictable. MJF will be revealed as the devil. Why is Emi Sakura getting a title shot after she lost to Toni Storm? Thanks for all you do. And then he followed up by going, oh, I was wrong about the match, but what does this do for Jay White? So he threw a few things out there. First, any chance MJF ends up being the devil?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I think
they're trying to like play that game a little bit, I think, by trying to make you think that. But it really, when you look at everything that's happened with this devil thing and this devil character and all that has happened, it really makes no sense for it to be MJF. Like, other than just to do it to swerve, you know, everybody, that's the only real reason you can even go that direction. So no, I think this is just another story for MJF, another, like, you know, another roadblock to put in front of him on his, you know, on his during his title reign. Like, I think that's what this is. Because I just can't connect the dots on anything else. I don't think so. And I don't know. I feel strangely confident about that.
Yeah, I do. I am. I think you should be. Jay White losing to Swerve. I mean, we might have talked about it an hour and a half ago, or you know, 2 hours ago. I can't sit here and say they need to do brave booking and have clean finishes and matches where you don't expect it, and then be critical of the fact that Jay White lost. I'm actually more disappointed he didn't lose more decisively, rather than just sort of a counter move into a roll-up leverage type pin. But Jay White losing to MJF the way that he did, and now this, it is kind of like, you know, to me, he's somebody that I don't know. I don't know if I'm higher on him or Swerve Strickland in terms of their upside in 2024. I think Jay White is a more polished in-ring product and on the microphone. They both have sort of some damage for just sort of, you know, hanging out. Swerve hasn't been in that pay-per-view main event like Jay was. But, I mean, losing to Swerve doesn't help Jay, but you can tell stories when people lose, and that ends up helping them. Zach, what do you think?
Yeah, I get like why there could be concern there for Jay White, just because of who Jay White is and like the kind of the history that he has, especially, you know, with a decent chunk of the AEW audience. And he's a really polished performer. There's absolutely no doubt about that. I think he's like in a position where he's such a strong performer that he can take, you know, these losses more so than others could. Like, I think Jay White is pretty solid. Like, it's weird to say because he's kind of been all over the place in some ways, but he's solidified as like a near top guy in AEW, regardless of what you do with them. You can slide him into this tournament. You can put him in main events for world titles. You can, you know, drop him into a blood feud if you want to do that. Like, he's a really well-rounded, like, performer for Tony Khan. It reminds me like a lot of like of Kevin Owens for in WWE. Like, a guy that you could like just have him out there doing anything that you need him to do. And yeah, does that mean he's going to carry the company on his shoulders with a world championship for, you know, for 12 months? No, but you know, there's other roles to play on a wrestling show, especially one that's week to week, and especially when you have 5 hours of TV time to fill. And so, to that end, I mean, Jay White's really, really valuable. And so, yeah, he lost, but I don't think that changes his ultimate position right now with Tony Khan, which is still a really good one.
And any talker getting a shot of losing to Tony Storm? I'll continue to mention it, but I mean, I'm kind of out of passion or hope that there's going to be some sort of system that makes any sense in terms of who gets title shots in AEW.
Yeah, I mean, you will drive yourself crazy with that. I mean, they're like, not you will, but just, you know, people will.
Yeah.
Like, I just think it. I mean, it's a there is no rhyme or reason for it. That's the story. It's not a good one, but that's the reality. And I mean, I think, you know, it's. I don't understand why you can't have that match and have it just not be for the title. Like, I just don't understand. Like, I don't think that, geez, the TBS championship's on the line in this match with Emi Sakura and Julia Hart. I really need to watch now, as opposed to just Julia Hart's going to be wrestling Emi Sakura on TV. Like, I just don't think you get, you know, like, you lose more by having random challengers come in for title matches than you gain for being able to say you're having a title match on your show. Like, you know, it's good that Julia Hart's on TV. It's good that she continues to get featured on TV. And I think there is, you know, there's something there. She's got a little bit of momentum behind her, but you know, just have her win matches. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. All right. We'll close with JB Detroit TML. I did enjoy the in-ring storylines in the first two Continental Classic matches tonight. The main Mox Lethal match had the intrigue of the Mox leg injury that he'll have to overcome for next week. And the Briscoe-Rouge match had the story of a desperate need for a win as both men were disappointed in their losses in the week one tournament. That being said, I'm not sure it was a great idea having tournament matches back to back. Yeah, and you know, I mentioned this in my TV report. I mean, I think they're doing a good job within the matches themselves as they're going on, talking about this in a sports-like way. Mm-hmm. The problem is it's Jay Lethal, who just isn't at the level where you want him winning a tournament, which I was thinking he's going to. And, you know, Briscoe is not going to win the tournament, and Roosh might, but they're not framing it in a way where you would think, like, he's ready to really fully capitalize on that. My issue is just they're making the best of a disappointing lineup that was constructed based on politics, availability, people being preoccupied with other things, which makes sense. You know, do you want someone to win a tournament when they're building them up for the match with MJF? I get not doing that. But how many big names were there excuses for? So you ended up with the names in the tournament that you did, which made it feel like, well, who's not busy? That's what this tournament feels like. Who's not busy for the next 2 months? And that's not a prestigious tournament. Who's not preoccupied with other things? So they could have done more to explain how they came up with the people that they did. But and frankly, just found a way to insert a couple bigger names in it, even if it was awkward or difficult. I don't think Darby had to cancel his trip, but they could have done something more with some of the others. But yeah, within the matches themselves, you know, there's some positive granular details to the stories they're telling during the matches. And I you know, gave him credit early for that, and I'm giving him more credit for it now.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think all that has been like pretty solid. Like they do a good job of like running through the rules. I think, you know, the graphic plays well, you know, for me, like in terms of like tracking who's got the points and what matches are coming up, like, you know, all that's fine. It's just that other stuff. And unfortunately that's a big part of this. So it is what stands out most.
Yeah. How would the Devil and his crew have known that Samoa Joe would interfere in their attack on MJF so that they'd already have prepared a graphic asking for a tag match next week? Also, I don't hate the premise, but this angle has, but the ability for the Devil and his associates to be able to hack into the lighting and broadcast is a very Retribution-like feel from WWE several years ago during the pandemic. Also, is it possible that Joe is associated with the Devil in some capacity, and this is all an act that will culminate in MJF losing his title at World's End to take time off for his possible real-life injuries? I'll pause there. The fact that Joe said, I'm watching your back, MJF, because I want you at your best at World's End, makes me think, I can buy into, you know, Wardlow and his group or the Devil group going, yeah, if we come out there, we know Joe's going to come out there and we're going to want to have them in a tag match because we think we can exploit the lack of trust between MJF and Joe, and we want to get an MJF anyway, and this is the best way we could go about it. I guess I can kind of talk myself into that not being some sort of like egregious plot hole. Zach, what do you think?
100%. I think that's fair, where, you know, you can, you know, lean into Joe said this, so hey, we're going to exploit that. You know, I give them credit for setting up that narrative, like, because, you know, yeah, it would have fallen apart. But I think that they did jump through the right hoops to make that make sense. So I'm not going to knock on them for that.
MJF tweeted his labrum injury and then deleted it. Have you found reliable sourcing or reporting on why?
Have not.
I didn't think it was out there. So I just want to ask that because it's possible something that just didn't land on my radar, and because I don't want to talk, I don't speculate if the answer is out there. But I hadn't heard either. But I wonder, look, based on what happened tonight and just kind of thinking it through, if the storyline is Samoa Joe wants to protect MJF so he's healthy, I wonder if Joe just called up MJF and was like, dude, why are you putting up that you're injured? Why do people need to know that? You're not wrestling every week on TV between now and World's End. The storyline is I'm protecting you from getting injured. I don't want people to think, especially if the plan is for Joe to win, that I'm beating somebody who's beat up and has all these injuries. However, MJF, so is it, if that, and again, I'm just wildly speculating that, you know, Joe or perhaps Tony Khan's like, hey, we want to tell the story. Not that Joe initiated. We want to tell the story. Joe's beaten a totally healthy MJF. Now you've put out there you're injured. Now, do you make it worse by going on TV and saying my hip's dislocated and my labrum is injured and I've got this and that and that. You're making it worse by saying it on Dynamite versus a quick social media post that everyone picked up on. But maybe the cat's out of the bag at that point. And you're just like, ah, you know, we just gotta go with it. But anyway, that just kind of crossed my mind. It just felt weird. If you're going to acknowledge it on TV, why delete it? And there was nothing about the post that jumped out to me as, oh, yeah, MJF sure could have handled that better. So I still don't know, but maybe they just decided to go with the injury since it's out there, but the plan was to not talk about it, or at least talk about whether they wanted to talk about it, and MJF didn't.
I mean, that was very strange, that post and then taking it down, and then, like, that connected in with what they did tonight. Because I, you know, your point about, like, he's not wrestling, or I guess he will next week, but, he there was no need to really mention that until you do an angle where maybe he does get injured. Like, and so, yeah, it makes you wonder, like, if it's a pivot. I don't, as far as, like, the tag match goes, to me, it seems ripe for, we'll get some kind of clarity as to where they're going on that and whether they're going to go into the match with MJF injured. So there's an out for Joe to win. Like, Joe almost, fails in his job to keep, MJF healthy. But yet he goes and he takes the title from him anyway. I think it's just, we'll get more clarity. But yeah, that tweet really, it almost makes me think, like, it was done on purpose to throw people off the scent, because it was just so random, and then pulled down. So I don't have a good sense of, like, how that specifically plays in. I just know that it didn't seem like they were going to mention the injury until they did tonight out of the blue.
Maybe the idea was Tony Khan was like, had an idea in his head, hey, we're going to have the Wardlow and another assistant in a tag match next week against Joe and MJF, and Wardlow's going to hurt MJF in that match. And so we want MJF to go into the match fresh so that it seems like the Wardlow's the one who injured him, or the Devil is the one who injured him, because we want to tell a story about the injury happening next week. And if it's a tag match, Joe can start the match out. MJF doesn't have to do much before there's an attack. Maybe there's an attack backstage before the match, and MJF is hurt. So maybe the idea was, we don't want to publicize this. We want to work it into the story. And storyline-wise, we didn't want you to be injured yet. Just trying to think of a logical reason. I mean, but again, yeah, you can't post something and unpost it without people knowing.
Well, but that makes sense, though. I mean, yeah, fits, I think, the a couple different narratives. Like, it helps, with MJF is, the fighting champion who's got a lot on his plate. It helps with the Joe and MJF story, with Joe kind of being MJF's protector until the match. And then it helps with the it furthers the Devil story too. So, that makes sense. The only thing that kind of messes it up is that the darn tweet. So, like, that's unfortunate.
Also, I like the big feel, history, and enthusiasm of the Flair and Sting backstage promo announcing that Sting's last match would be at Revolution in the Greensboro Coliseum, but it was clear they fumbled on some of their lines. Yes.
I don't know. Wait, like, I feel like I was scrolling through social media, like, during the show too. Not this show, but Dynamite. I feel like I'm on the other side of that promo. Like, I just don't think I liked it as much as everybody else seemed to like it. It just, I don't know. I felt it was, like, they got to the right place. Greensboro Coliseum, that's solid. But I don't know. Like, they just were kind of fawning out over each other, and I don't know. It just, I don't know. They didn't stick the landing for me.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. How much longer will Wardlow keep getting squash matches when will he get an actual storyline? It's not like we're being introduced to him the first time, and we know he's obviously a physical freak in nature and a dominant force. I guess if the storyline is for him to go after MJF, it's hard to have him in a random match against another top guy. So instead of a squashing one or two jobbers who won't appear again, there's kind of had this little AR Fox thing I can relate to you and what you're going through and blaming someone else, but don't blame other people for problems like I did. Okay, and Wardlow says, I'm going to kill you next week. I mean, they built a little storyline in on it. It would be nice once we get past whatever's going on with MJF for Wardlow to just be in the mix. And that's why I included his name as somebody I'd like to see in the tournament. Like, the mm-hmm. tournament shouldn't be – we want every match to be 3 or 4 stars with guys who wrestle like each other. I think you could have done something with Wardlow in the tournament. But, it falls in the category of brave booking. You're breaking down the normal parameters you put, bumper bowling, where it's like there's no gutter balls because you pad everything with interference and DQ and low blows and roll-ups. If you put Wardlow in there, it might mean he's got to lose. But if he has 5 matches and he wins 4, but he loses 1, and it's like that's later, but he still looks good in some of the other matches, but he comes up short. But you're giving him a variety of opponents, showing what he can do in the ring. They don't have to be 12-minute matches, but he can do a 12-minute match. That's what most of these are. So anyway, that's a –
well, yeah, I mean, like, look, even in the G1.
If he's one of your guys you're pushing, put him on TV and get him in the ring doing more than – because, you know, Wardlow forever talking about, you know, in his little room that he films in, you know, sending him whatever that is, and House of Black. It's like too many people are just doing their own thing for too long, and people want to see progress. And Zach?
Oh, are you still there, Wade?
Yep. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah, so just – I get people going. We've seen enough squashes. Let's move on.
Yeah, I get that too. I will say though, you know, I think for somebody like Wardlow, I think squashes aren't the worst thing in the world for him. If you don't have anything more for him at this point, because you know you can just remind people that he's around. You can remind people that he is a freak of nature and he's a force. And then, you know, it, I don't think it hurts him to just keep doing that. Yes, you may say, oh, this is boring. But I think that if there's ever a time and a place for – and there is a time and a place for squashes, like this – it works better with him than it would for, like, you know, Darby Allin.
It's cool that Dante Martin got to return in his hometown, and I'm glad they brought up the significance of his injury for 8 months ago on the broadcast so they could give an actual story and context to the match. But I'm not sure why they were matched up with a legendary babyface team in the Hardys and Brother Zay, though. Yeah, it just felt like, hey, here's some people who can take bumps and do a job. And I don't know if – have they ever on Dynamite explained Brother Zay?
They have not. They have not explained Brother Zay. And I had the same exact thought. I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, are they? And then when I heard the Hardys music hit and then the Top Flight guys come out, I was like, wait a minute. Is this like a 12-man tag or something? Like what are we doing here? And then they were like against each other. And I'm like, this is one of those moments where it's like, just you have heels in the back that Top Flight can work with. You know, there's just use them. You don't need to use the Hardys for this.
Yeah. Yep. Totally. I feel as though the announced team was definitely dropping some innuendos after Mariah May entered Tony Khan's office to presumably request her first match. That being said, who will Mariah feud with first, and what do we think of her ceiling and her floor? So I haven't seen a lot of her work. She comes highly. I thought were overrated by the time I saw them on the big stage. But her character being sort of obsessed with Toni Storm makes me think her first opponent will be Toni Storm, unless there's, you know, a quick squash over a local or something along the way. What do you think about her introduction? Have you seen much of her work, and where do you think she's headed?
So I've seen a good chunk of her work, and she's come a long way in the last few years for sure. And lots of progress there. And I think she adds like a nice layer to the AEW women's division. But I think she's been dropped into like the AEW world exactly in the right place. Like there's a few fans out there that are going to know who she is and have followed her career, but it's not many. Like this is not, Mercedes Moné coming in or even Ruby Soho coming in. Like it's just not on that level. So I think, for her, it's better to come in with like absolutely no expectations like she has, dropped into, you know, a, a, a role where you're kind of sidekick to Tony Storm, and then just do your thing and do good work and, you know, get yourself over that way instead of, you know, oh, this is, you know, somebody great from Japan. So I think this is like a really good spot for her to introduce herself to the larger AEW audience. You know, as far as her first opponent, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think Toni Storm will be her first big feud. I can see her, like, taking on former Storm, you know, opponents, like Shida. Like, she could have something there or something with, like, Outcasts, like Saraya and Ruby. Like, I think you can do that route. Like, women that Toni Storm has beaten, you know, and have her kind of, you know, kind of roll through them again. That could be a good way to kind of get her rolling. But yeah, I think her ultimately she's going to end up, you know, doing something with Toni Storm. And I think that's fine. As far as her ceiling, you know, there just is not enough out there to say, oh, she can be like a top woman in AEW that you can really attach the company to, attach the division to, and that's going to draw, you know, big time ratings. Like, that's just, I just don't think that that's out there at this point. But I think she can be an efficient, you know, middle of the card act in the women's division and on TV regularly. And so for right now, given her body of work, I think that's a good slot. And, you know, we'll see, you know, in a year, 18 months, like, how she's progressed and what she's done. But at this point in time, yeah, I think it'd just be silly to kind of put any other expectations on her other than, you know, strong worker who's going to try to get over and be a big star.
And finally, JD says, Christian is the perfect manipulative, slimy heel. I don't care what anyone says. For my money, he's the best heel in wrestling at the moment. Copeland seeing right through it, catching Christian and calling out Christian's BS made him look legitimately strong. This was Copeland's best performance in AEW to date, in my opinion, and Christian was a big part of that. It's also a good idea to have Copeland Christian for the TNT title at AEW's debut in Montreal next Wednesday. As always, love the show and go VIP. Thank you, JB. Yeah, Zach, just any thoughts, any more thoughts on Christian and Copeland in particular, well, actually both of them. Christian heel, best heel of the year, and Copeland best performance yet.
Yeah, I think it's hard to argue either one. I mean, Christian, like, I think Edge was, or I keep on, but Adam Copeland was good in this segment. But, man, he didn't have to do much because Christian Cage just, like, set that whole thing up for him just perfectly. I mean, he totally did the job of the heel out there, which is to just lay it all on thick and, you know, do it in a way where, you know, you come across as genuine and you come across as you believe it, but everybody else watching knows that you're absolutely full of it. And it's not easy to do. Like, you can really, like, I think you can fumble that if you take it, you know, too over the top one direction or the other. But, man, he played that perfectly. So all Edge had to – I did it again. All Adam Copeland had to do was just, you know, just react. And it ended up working out great. So yeah, props to Christian. I think he's really clicking on all cylinders. And like, he's really given Tony Khan another like piece on the game board as far as, you know, a talent that you can do something with of significance. And when you think back to like 2021 Christian Cage, where, man, he was just dead on arrival after that, like the hype of him being the surprise, a surprise signee, to where he is now. It's night and day. And so it's almost like you're playing with the house money when you talk about him, because he was just so far out of this kind of top tier picture. And now he's right there in the middle of it and doing good work.
What was I going to say about, oh, I know. Now we reset the clock, and it's got to be at least 8 months before there's another swerve in a wrestling segment on AEW television. So we got to reset the clock. So the quickest we can do it is an 8-month turnaround. So nobody else gets to go. And I like the segment, but nobody else gets to go in the ring and pretend something in a very believable, sincere way. Well, but believable with quote marks around it. You know what I mean? It's like believable if you don't know, yeah, Christian and his makeup of his character. people inspired by it, so that, you know, next week it's Chris Statlander doing a swerve where she's pretending to side with some heel, and then in the end it turns out she's really against him. It's like, no, let's 8 months and then we can redo it again. That maximum once or twice a year, and really once a year would be good.
Like, 1,000%. I mean, and like, here's the thing, like, this worked, like, because number one, Christian has a lot of, you know, just a lot of good equity built up as a heel. So you buy what he does out there. But the other big reason it worked was, like, they have such a long, long history together. And so it's, you know, you could reasonably believe that, like, okay, maybe this guy, after thinking things over, like, okay, I'm not going to go after my best friend of 40 years. Like I, you know,
yeah,
but that's the only time it can work. Like, anything less than that is really, you're pushing it. So I couldn't agree more, Wade. Couldn't agree more.
All right. We will end on that note, unless there is something else you want to sneak in, Zach, before we sign off.
Nope. I went through my notes a couple seconds ago. Yeah, we covered it all.
Excellent. So scscoops.com if you want to read what Zach is doing these days. And what's a YouTube search?
YouTube search, just scscoops on YouTube and Brass Ring Media on YouTube as well.
Excellent. Zach, it's been fun. We'll do this again.
Absolutely, Wade. I would love to come back. It's been a blast. I love doing these, and thanks to the listeners, and appreciate you for having me on.
And by the way, you promised me the Bears weren't going to be good enough to beat the Vikings this year.
Well, was that really a win for us? Really? Like, I don't know. I'm not sure.
In the record, it is, and we wanted our rocket scientist quarterback to have. I mean, we're like two or three semi-catchable balls away from running away with that. So the wide receivers kind of let Doc down a little bit. But
I'm so down on the Bears season this year, and just like, yeah, just them in general, that I wanted it for you too, Wade. I really, thank you.
Yeah. Well, week off, and then Justin Jefferson, and then who knows who's starting for the Vikings in their next game in 2 weeks. That'll be, or a week and a half. Kind of hoping Dobbs gets another chance. As bad as he was in certain ways, as much as the Bears defense found out, oh, you just don't let him run out of the pocket, and
right,
and that's the way most of his offense, and okay, is that going to keep happening? I feel like it'd be sad for, because, I mean, again, there are like two or three balls that if they just, you know, caught, I mean, like, it just, it wasn't that far away from a win where everyone's like, wow, he's back. He's back on. You know, it's like, it's so weird how the narrative changes. Like a basketball game, like if at the end it's a 3-point shot, someone makes it or they miss it, and it changes the game from a win to a loss or a loss to a win. The whole tone of afterwards is this team is on a roll, or this team is playing. It's like, it's one shot. It was random. The game was the game up until that moment. Your opinion on how the team played shouldn't change based on the last shot, whether it was enough to give them a win or a loss. But that's just a more broad sport thing.
And that's exactly why the win for the Bears just does nothing for me. It's like, it's okay, yeah, they won, but like, no. Bad, it's just bad all around. And, you know, someone needs to beat the Packers, and it's not going to be the Bears, so it might as well be the Vikings.
Yes, yep. And, I mean, the Vikings didn't give up a touchdown and still lost. I think the last two games they don't
right,
they give up. I don't even – yeah, so it's just like – their defense is playing well enough to not give up a touchdown, and they still lost.
I'll tell you what, we'll trade you Justin Fields. Okay.
Yeah. There's some talk on by the national commentators. Like, is he good enough to stick with, or should they be looking at the draft or something else? And it sounds like you're willing to cut him. Yeah.
I mean, I'm willing to anything at this point. 6 wins in two seasons, just, you know, whatever. I'll go out there and tuck the ball around for a little while, maybe.
Very good. All right, thanks, Zach. I'll talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, Wade. Thanks.
You bet.